And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The race is on, and while today in Barcelona was all about testing, we have seen all 10 cars together on track at last. But what can we actually learn from day one of testing? I'm your host, Ed Straw, and joining me to answer that question are Mark Hughes and Gary Anderson. Mark, finally turned up. I think this is our 13th podcast. We've been waiting for so long.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. We've got you down from the wild north to offer your insight.
Yeah, I'll carry on.
Just trying to make sure everyone can understand what words you're saying. And Gary Anderson, another first day of testing for you.
Yeah, another first day of testing for me. I've been here for a few of them. Interesting day because, you know, to be honest, it's the first day of testing. And we had, I don't know how many cars ran. There was different drivers changing at lunchtime. But there was 10 teams running. Obviously a single car each. And they changed their drivers at lunchtime. But nothing stopped. They just kept going. I don't think there was a red flag at all during the whole day. I mean, that's just absolutely incredible for how complex these cars are and how they come at them from sort of different directions to achieve the same goal from a team point of view. To get that reliability on day one is pretty impressive.
Do you think it might have been that the restriction to 6 days over the 2 weeks rather than 8 has really focused their minds on getting everything running straight away so they don't waste any valuable time, so they don't run out of performance testing time?
Yeah, it is, but you know, it's always the things that you haven't quite done right that catch you out. So, you know, again, just the planning and trying to make sure that doesn't happen is quite tough. So, you know, I have to pat them all on the back for it. I know what it's like with cars that, you know, you have reliability problems, and we've seen it here through the years. I mean, 2014, when we first got these new regulations, you know, for the first morning, nobody left the pits. They just couldn't get out of the garage, really. So just a whole different dimension. And it's all part of the fact that, you know, now they're so geared up to run all the stuff on test rigs of some sort, mechanical test rigs. I mean, we say it's 6 days testing. But, you know, I think, you know, Honda can put a complete car on a rig and run the gearbox and engine, the whole thing running. So that's the sort of reliability stuff that lets you down. And really, you know, the equipment that the teams have now is just second to none.
I think the other factor today, of course, was the track temperatures, because last year people couldn't get the tyres up to temperature and were doing spins first lap out of the pits and red flag. And so we didn't have any of that today. It was a really good, really good day. And you could see the track, as far as track side, you could see it sort of rubbering in before your eyes. It was getting blacker and blacker in the braking zones. And it was just, you know, it was really good. It was a really good running day.
Yeah, it didn't kind of feel like that first day of freezing cold testing.
No, it really didn't. It felt like, you know, proper Grand Prix weekend almost. It really ramped up very quickly.
And the amount of mileage we saw was massively increased. I had a look at the number of laps that were done last year and then compared it to this year. And the increase this year is 42%. And even if you knock out Williams, because Williams obviously didn't run on the first day, they were
so underprepared they didn't have the car ready. It's still a 27% increase of laps, taking into account the other nine teams. So they are really racking at the miles. I think the whole point about just being a bit more efficient with testing is a big thing. They know they can't afford to waste days, and that has grown over the years, hasn't it? From 16 to 12 to 8 to 6 days. But I mean, you mentioned going tracks, obviously on the first day, the cars are always finding their way. They're doing aero tests, so it's probably the least representative you'll ever see these cars running this year. But you do get a bit of a feel for some of the character of some of the cars and some of the strengths and weaknesses. So, yeah, what really grabbed your attention?
The Red Bull. So watching at turn 2-3, where you've got a sort of an S bend going up the hill, and you're compromised by the. You can't get a proper angle of attack into three because you're busy sorting two out by the time it arrives. So there's inevitable a degree of compromise. But that handled that compromise way better than any car. The Mercedes was sort of comparably quick, but it wasn't as aggressive in the direction change. And Max Verstappen was just putting it where he wanted. He was changing up before the actual turn in of three. The Merc was sometimes doing that. None of the others were. They were changing after the turn-in. Just a little visual indication of how much speed they were able to carry in there. But having said that, the Red Bull looked a little bit edgy on the slope. So we saw Max have a couple of spins and on the slower corners. So, you know, I think, Gary, you probably see quite often, don't we, that a car can be out of balance in one speed range, but in balance in another one. And I guess we're still in the early stages of finding out whether that window is wide enough on any particular car. So, yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, I think it is a compromise. The one thing that sort of gets your attention is obviously trying to get the balance, or the driver gets your attention, is try to get the balance in the fast corners. And then you sort of live with the slower corner, basically. And I think that's what the Red Bull Verstappen's doing at the minute. You know, they still work the front wing, the outboard end of the front wing, quite hard. So they've got a sort of loaded front wing, more of a loaded front wing in that outboard portion. So that normally is pretty good for low speed corners, because when you turn the steering wheel for a low speed corner, you put more steering lock on it. So you actually open up more of that part of the wing by the wheel getting out of the way as such. So that makes the wing work harder. The steering can be a little bit of a switch. So they may have, you know, we used to play around with sort of three or four different steering angles. Obviously, down the straight, the wheels are straight ahead. Then you would turn the road wheels at about 3 degrees for a very fast corner, 6 degrees for a mediumish speed, 9 degrees for a slow speed corner, and 12 degrees for a hairpin. And you can move the center of pressure forward with that steering lock if you do the front wing end plates correctly. But you can be too aggressive with it as well. So I think that might be what is happening with the Red Bull at the moment. They just haven't got the balance between the two for the steering lock characteristic change. So it's a simple thing to fix if you know you've got that problem. And really, and truthfully, that's one of the things that you don't know what the driver can live with until you get to the track. The track is the one thing that makes that balance change stand out. So I'm sure they'll work in that area and make it better.
And I guess when you've got a driver like Verstappen who quite happily lives with an unstable car, the temptation is to take it up to that limit as a first guess, isn't it? And you work backwards from there if you need to.
Yeah, they've also got quite a funny or strange front suspension. Most teams have it now, where the push rod bolts onto the upright. And basically with that, you can lower the front of the car when you put steering lock on it. And you can also jack the weight across the car. And all of that is to try to reduce the understeer at low speed, because these cars, the tendency is for them to understeer at low speed. Now, what happens normally is that when you go to a softer tyre, which you use for qualifying, you normally get more understeer. So they're running the harder tyre at the moment. So, you know, that maybe they're taking that into account, that whenever they go to the soft tyre, they will have on the car very pointy in the slow speed. It'll stop that understeer a bit. So, yeah, let's see how the days unfold. But I quite like the Red Bull, because the detail on it is just from front to back. Is pretty impressive.
Yeah, you're very much admiring that car in the pit lane this afternoon, taking it close. One of the good things we should note is that they're not allowed to have the screens in front of the garage anymore unless they're doing a major repair. So you can just go down and stand and just look at the car. We had a few Ferrari mechanics blocking our view of it while they were doing some work on the rear earlier. But basically, you can just stand there, look at the car, really get a feel for all those details that normally are quite hard to grab at this time of year.
Yeah, I've heard rumours that they're going to offer you and me a job as blockers.
We'd be brilliant value.
Yeah, we'll have to put the money up a bit.
Oh, you'd be useless, Mark.
Sorry. You're like a straw. You need mass. Mm. We've got mass. Yeah, we've got mass.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's there'll be a few teams that pull that trick, but most of them were just sort of resigned to it, weren't they? And you could actually...
They wouldn't answer questions, though.
No. Occasionally, brief conversations, but yeah, they're not quite that cooperative. But it's good to see Formula One in kind of embracing that a little bit more. We should probably talk a little bit about Mercedes, because we've not mentioned them as yet. And as usual, Mercedes racking up the miles straight out of the box, more laps than anyone else. Lewis Hamilton fastest, 1:16.976, which is a lot faster than the fastest time, the equivalent time last year, which
comfortably was fastest, wasn't he?
Yeah, and so he was quick as Valtteri Bottas second. Actually, Sergio Perez was third for what the times are worth. But just as we've come to expect, Mercedes comes out, it does the miles, the car looks at least sort of fine, and it works. And it's just, you know, six seasons have happened, and this is the first day of the seventh, and nothing fundamentally has changed. We can certainly say they haven't dropped the ball. We're sure of that, aren't we?
Well, it is different to last year, of course, in terms of how much running they did, but in terms of how quick they were. And we later found out that last year's first week car wasn't the Prucker car. The Prucker car came in the second week because it was with the new regulations. They felt that the improvement curve in the wind tunnel was steep enough to justify doing that. And they've said all along, we're not doing that this year. We did it in 17 with the new regs. We did it with 19, but we're not doing it. And so what we're seeing this week is the Pucker test car, and straight away, and it's quick.
The thing you got to remember as well, though, that time was done on the hard tire, which, you know, there's
C2s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's 4/10, maybe 5/10 in going to the tire that whoever was second fastest was using. So that 16.9 could very easily become a 16.5 or 16.4 very, very quickly, which would probably be a few people depressed about that. But there is a lot of people, and Ferrari are one of them, that are saying that, you know, they're not pushing their testing this year as they did last year for performance run, and they're learning about the car. And maybe there's a few people taking too much heed of what Mercedes did last year. You know, Mercedes had developments in the pipeline coming through for the second test and then for the race weekend in Melbourne. And there's a few people, I think, relying that their development programs that are coming through is going to do the same step. I think a few of them might get a shock.
It's a strange thing, because as long as Ferrari have changed the way they approach it because they think it's a better way to work rather than they're worried about people misinterpreting times, because just as it's sort of fraudulent if you do a low fuel run just to get a top time for a day and grab some headlines, it's just as fraudulent to sort of say, well, we'll just be really quiet so no one notices us in the hope of doing it. So I just hope they're doing that for the right reasons. And we know that Ferrari can be quite sensitive to what the Italian media is doing, etc. So as long as there's a reason for it, that's okay, isn't it? But it doesn't necessarily stand to reason. You know, I've seen some people put this argument, well, last year they were really quick at the start of testing and then they didn't win in Australia. And this year they're not very quick in outright lap time. That doesn't matter itself in testing, but therefore they're going to be brilliant. It's not that simple, is it? It's about what you're doing and why.
Yeah. I think they need to bolt some new bits in the car. As I said earlier, the Ferrari seem to have got left behind a little bit on the direction of the era philosophy that the majority of teams have taken. And I've always, you know, worked on the basis that the majority aren't usually wrong. You know, they got their unloaded outboard end of the front wing and that, but I think that's a minimal problem to them. I mean, everything is converging a bit. The teams that had the highly loaded front wing outboard end has dropped it a bit, and the teams that have got the lesser loaded front wing end plates has raised it a bit. So, you know, there is a compromise in the middle there somewhere, and you've also got to look at the leading edge of that part of the wing. Some teams run a fairly high leading edge. There's a big throat underneath it, the ones that run a higher trailing edge. So we're going to do a little bit of a survey on that a little bit later in the week across the teams and see what we can get. But I think they've got bigger aerodynamic problems personally than just that area.
I'm wondering if Ferrari have thought, if we do, if we switch philosophy, if we go to the loaded outboard wing like Mercedes or Red Bull, it's going to take us half a season to get fully understand it, and then it's obsolete anyway because the 21 regs are completely different. I wonder if they've just thought, well, we'll just pull this one as far as we can and almost write this season off and just do as best we can with it with what we've got. you know, maybe not, but just it makes you think that the first impression makes you think.
Right, the season off might be a bit strong, but I know what you mean in terms of you accept there's not enough upside to taking the downside.
Yeah, and there might be an upside in 21.
Yeah, I've always worked the philosophy that you sort of half of the direction of development is about proving to yourself that you know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you just sort of stand still and say, I know that would be okay, it might take us a little while to get on top of it. You're not proving it to yourself or to your team. And to be honest, to go into 2021 regulations, which are completely different, I think you've got to have confidence in your ability to direct the development direction, because, you know, they are all new cars and the cars are very dimensional for 2021. To be honest, to understand the regulations, you need to draw the car out first before you can even see it. These regulations, you can read them and you can get a picture in your mind of what the areas you can work on. But the 2021 regs were completely different. You need to design the car basically and then say, right, okay, wow, look at that. And how these are the areas that we can modify a little bit. So I think you have to have a lot of confidence in your ability to read those regulations and optimize it. And if you don't show that to yourself, I think you always go in with a question mark over it.
It seems odd that they've done a relatively conservative car this year, given how progressive they've been since 17, really. I mean, a lot of innovation coming out of there and really, really creative stuff that's since been copied. I mean, Mercedes have...
Side pods is the classic example.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not the people in there can't create, is it? There seems to have been a decision to go on this very conservative route.
Well, they might have taken that decision based on what Mercedes had last year. So there might be a couple of truckloads of stuff coming up from Italy to bolt onto the car sometime during the next 2 weeks, and even for Melbourne. So we have to wait and see. We still haven't seen the true cars that are going to race in Melbourne. Anybody we've spoken today have said that the team has said, well, you know, the car's fairly primitive at the minute. There's a big update package coming. So Ferrari won't tell us that, but I'm pretty sure they'll be doing something.
Well, yeah, it's still early days, and these are really sort of early impressions we're trying to give of the car. But it is good though that we've got some slightly different philosophies across the top teams. At least it gives a technical talking point. And even though the rules are quite restrictive, and next year they're going to be even more restrictive with the 21 package. But at least there's still differences that even the untrained eye can just look at. You can look at the Ferrari and compare the nose; you can see it. You know, it's great. There's still these differences people can look at. We should talk about some of the midfield teams as well. I mean, just going in times order for convenience as much as anything. Sergio Perez was third, only 0.4 down. Again, gap not representative. We're not worried about that. But Mark, a lot of talk about the fact it was a pink Mercedes was the phrase everyone was applying.
Yeah,
to it.
I mean, it's got it looks much more like last year's Mercedes than it looks like last year's Racing Point. There's no question of that. I mean, so the nose is nearly identical. It's not dissimilar in profile further back either. But why not? I mean, it's they're using the same engine, gearbox, the wheelbase is going to be about the same. I understand that they may be even using front components from Mercedes now. It just seems a logical thing to do. You're allowed to do it. Why would you go a different path to a better resource team that's just won a world championship?
And as Gunter Steiner, the Haas team, he was asked about that tonight. So there's been a little bit of aggro between those two teams in the past, and Haas got a lot of criticism for using Ferrari bits when it first came in, but over a sustained period. So obviously he was asked to see if he'd throw a few stones back. But he said, "Well, of course you're going to do that if you're a small team. Why wouldn't you do that? It validates the approach we've taken. It's logical." And he also said, it also makes sense that if you're going to take some concept inspiration from front runners, which all teams do, they all look at each other. You can always learn something from a car. It makes sense that you would take it from the kind of team you're connected to, because the Mercedes engine installation, Mercedes engine, Mercedes gearbox, you know, rear suspension, that's the rear end effectively of the Mercedes. So that's designed to work with the rest of the Mercedes. As I said, so that's your logical pathway.
It's your logical pathway. I'm a bit worried because they're now using the Mercedes wind tunnel as well. That sort of, whenever Mercedes finished one of their tests, they left their model in the tunnel.
Now we can categorically rule that out, can't we? Because there have been legal cases about this sort of thing in the past. Yeah, I think you know that very well.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's difficult to say, because, you know, the guys at Racing Point are, you know, a lot of people there that I have worked with and that have done a very good job. and they are racers as a team. So
it's a great team.
Yeah, I think inspiration taken from Mercedes is.
That's a world-class... I should just say, to set the scene, in the background, we've got Luke Hinsel, our ace video producer, who's just editing a video we recorded earlier, and he just snuck in. You wouldn't have heard him. And then he decided to sneak out of a glass door. Unfortunately, he'd slightly misjudged
the width of his hips.
Yeah, yeah. I think he doesn't. He's got a bigger rear end than
than he realises. Yeah.
Than a Ferrari.
But it's not. It's nice he was making the effort, though.
Yeah, you know, the team's very good. The team's very strong. And I'm just hoping the team have made a conscious decision to really take a lead from the 6 times world champions Mercedes, and it hasn't been a little bit of muscle or something coming from Lawrence Stroll that's forced them into that position for instant success as such.
We should say ultimately as well, though, that the car has got some differences. So it isn't last year's Mercedes. There are clear differences in aero surfaces, etc. But yeah, that is a team in a hurry. The ownership wants to make gains quickly, and ultimately there's things that team needs to do, expanding its factory, its facilities, in order to do what the big teams do. So it's quite a sensible thing to think, well, while we're gearing up to do this, let's take some of this off the shelf part. But I think big ambitions at that team, but the fact that they've come out with a car like that's quite encouraging, and the pace doesn't mean a great deal, but it's certainly not looking like a bad car, is it? The next quickest of the midfield ones, Daniel Kvyat in the AlphaTauri, as we must now call it, in 5th place, 7/10 down for what it's worth. Now, Gary, we had a chat with Jody Eggington, the technical director at I was going to say Toro Rosso, but I almost stopped myself there. Yeah, the technical director at AlphaTauri, and they're bullish about their chances, and they've really taken this thing of having a partner team, Red Bull Technology stuff, almost not to the limit in a bad way, but they're taking everything they can and really focusing their effort on their aero concept and their approach, which is actually different to that of the Red Bull. Anybody who says that that's just a Red Bull in different colours hasn't looked at the car.
No, I agree completely. There is nothing wrong, I think, with what's going on in the fact that, you know, Red Bull has a B team. It's you've still got to clothe the car in your own creation of bodywork, but they have a B team with a lot of mechanical parts on it. Ferrari have a B team in Haas. They've sort of got a bit of a B team in Alfa Romeo, or C team, whatever you like to call it. And again, with Racing Point, you know, for Mercedes, it's a bit of a B team. And there's nothing wrong with that, because those big guys are spending huge, huge budgets on research and stuff. So, you know, you might as well latch onto that, and it will help the smaller teams to improve their performance. And all we want is competitive racing. So the new AlphaTauri is, you know, it's a nice car. The sort of understanding philosophy from Jody talking to him today was very, very good. So I think that he's in a position where they've now got two drivers that aren't new drivers coming up through. They're actually experienced drivers. Both of them have driven for the mothership, Red Bull, I suppose you might call it. And they've been downgraded to drive for Toro Rosso again. But they are podium experienced drivers. They've also, you know, been very good at qualifying and whatever. So they need, you know, this is probably, I almost called them Toro Rosso as well. Almost, this is probably AlphaTauri's best opportunity to actually put in a good season and just make sure that they take the best out of what they've got, because it's the last year of these regulations, and the regulation changing dramatically for next year. So, you know, anything could happen next year for the teams as far as getting it really, really right for a small team and getting it really, really wrong for a big team. That can all happen for sure with the regulation change that we're looking at.
Let's just briefly note that Luke Hinsel, our video producer, has been in and out of the room several times without crashing. So nobody will have heard. Let's just rattle through the last few teams. Mark, you went and chatted to Carlos Sainz Jr. at the end of the day. McLaren obviously had a sort of run. They were cracking on with mileage quite early on. He was 6th fastest, 0.86 down. Good start from McLaren.
I mean, they were talking about, touching on before, we were talking about how well prepared the teams all were. You basically said, well, we ran out of tyres, really. That's how reliable we were.
Effectively 10 sets a day, isn't it?
Yeah, so we ended up doing pit stop practice instead. So he made the point that this is a very basic car that they've come up, you know, for these first few days, in just in order to get that running in, and there's a lot of performance coming. And even so, it doesn't look too dusty. It maybe looks a little bit weak on the front end out on the track, but other than that, it looks tidy.
Just sort of try to relate that 10 sets of tyres. Ed, you've got the laps there. How many laps did McLaren do? Have you got them?
The McLaren did 161 laps.
So that's 16 laps per set of tyres as a rough guide.
Which is a reasonable amount of mileage. It's not a generous circuit on tyres, is it, in terms of it's reasonably hard on them?
Yeah, but again, you know, if you got, I think it's a 66-lap race here. So if you're doing 16 laps on each set of tyres, you've got a multi-stop race, and we know that's not going to happen. So I would question the fact of running out of tyres. I would say you're going to have to take them further than that before you get a real handle on how your car's looking after tyres for a race distance that's probably got a two-stop race here. You know, that's 22 laps per stint. So unless you can drag, you know, 22, maybe 25 laps out of it now in these conditions, you might just hit the barrier a bit to come the race here.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to monitor the how much they're getting out of a set of tyres as the days go on. Renault, Mark Hughes, Daniel Ricciardo was seventh fastest for them. Not 9/10 down, basically. And Esteban Ocon took over the car, and he was sort of a tenth and a bit behind that. So, you know, the Renault catching the eye for the... We talked yesterday on the podcast about the narrow nose, etc. Yeah. But it feels a bit of an inconclusive day, really, for Renault. We're not...
Yeah, I mean, on track, it looks a tidy car. It looks nice. Very... The Renault engine this year, incredibly smooth sounding. Don't know what's changed. Are you getting actually hear the whirring of the ears as it goes past? But that aside, it looks a nice, easy, balanced car. Just doesn't, at the moment, have the sheer grip of something like a Red Bull or a Mercedes. But I guess a solid start.
Williams, Gary, George Russell was ninth fastest, 1.192 seconds down. Kind of a worlds away from where they were at the start of last year. Well, I say at the start of last year, worlds away from where they were last year. And George Russell was very happy about the car. I think he said it wasn't quite as scary as last year's car to drive.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about it. I think last year taught him a lesson about that and made him into a better driver, probably, because you had to drive within the vehicle you got. You've always got to do that. So it's good because it allows you to push to the limit of the vehicle you're driving, and that's always important, especially whenever you consider, you know, you got maybe a little bit of a damp condition, you're on slicks, and you still got to go out there and push to the limit of the grip level you've got. And George was able to handle that pretty well last year. He didn't have big offs and stuff, which is very easy to happen. But yeah, I think they're a bit more impressed with the car this year. You know, they've at the end of the day, whenever it all boils down, I think they've probably joined the back of the midfield bunch. I don't think they're that much better than just joining the back of the midfield bunch.
Yeah, they're not hanging off the end of it anymore. Not, they've that, joined in the
back.
But
that's a win
of it,
for them. It's getting in the game.
Yeah. Last year, there was as big a gap from the team that was ninth to them in tenth as there was from the team that was third to the team that was ninth, or more or less. So, you know, closing that gap up will give them an opportunity. And if you've got an opportunity, you get the motivation, and also, you know, whenever other teams have a bad day, you have a bit of a good day, and suddenly it's all a bit different for you. So, yeah, let's see how the rest of the testing unfolds. It's very, very early to make too many assumptions.
Alfa Romeo, Mark, this morning we went down there to first thing to have a look at the car, and it was sort of revealed that we had seen some shakedown shots the other week. Robert Kubica was actually the faster of their drivers, 1.410 seconds down. Antonio Giovinazzi took over and ended up being slowest overall. You know, there seems to be some reasonable detail gains on that car, but also another, it seemed like a bit of a tricky day for them.
Yeah, I don't think fully representative. They were doing very, they did a lot of running on the harder tyres, didn't they? And they're talking about, or Giovinazzi was talking about at the end of the day, that they're going to get, you know, more running in on the softer tyres in the next 2 days. So probably have a better handle on them by then, I think. I think they look, you know, solidly in the midfield, even though the list would put them at the back. I don't think that's representative.
I don't think there's any... There's not a Class C this year. No. Probably not, anyway, that we did have a clear Class C last year with Williams. We're really using the times order here just as a sorting mechanism more than anything, because it's convenient. And that brings us to the last team, Gary Haas. Kevin Magnussen was 14th, 1.490 seconds down, but 106 laps. A lot of work was being done aero-wise with that team. Obviously, they had an aero problem last year that contributed to their problems and then led on to the problems they had with his tyres, etc. And it was very difficult to pick that up in the conditions here last year, so they'll be very aware of that. And there'll be a lot of work going on there just to make sure everything's correlating as it should do. And Günther Steiner talked about this. That's exactly the right approach for Haas, isn't it? So a day spent data gathering, understanding, making sure that the gremlins that were there in the car last year but didn't show have been eliminated.
Well, the problem is they didn't show last year, and they went away from here cock-a-hook that all was well. and they won't show this year either. It's just such a difference when you get to circuits where there's, you know, temperature in the ground, ambience higher. You know, if you get any little airflow separation problems, let's say, in the diffuser, and they're not big enough to notice here, once you get to those hotter circuits, they just multiply by, you know, tenfold, and suddenly it becomes a drama. And if you haven't got good rear grip when you're braking and turning at the corner, or if you have got good stability, aerodynamic stability when you're braking and turning into the corner, it'll be okay on fresh tires, but whenever the tires get a bit used up, you know, the rear of the car becomes really nervous, and then it just eats up the rear tires. So, yeah, I'm sure they're looking deeply at it to try and make sure they've covered themselves, but I don't think they showed to me last year that they really got a handle on the problem enough to do it. And that's what I'm saying about confidence in your direction and development. You know, if you don't have a go at fixing it, then you're still going in there with a question mark hanging over it. So, again, we'll have to see how it unfolds for them. But I haven't seen anything yet on the car that I would have said was a really sort of exciting thing. And actually, there's one interesting point down on the... They've got turning vanes hanging down from the chassis, basically, and through the front wheels. And they've got turning vanes that are turning airflow in towards the centre of the car, similar to Ferrari and whatever. But they've also got a batch of turning vanes on the outside of the footplate of it, turning the airflow outwards. And, you know, the airflow's got to go in there and scratch its head to think, where am I going to go now? It's quite a strange thing to do, to try and ask the airflow to go in two different directions at the same time. And it's the same airflow you're talking to. So I think there's a little bit of a lack of something there. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Well, as we said, it's only the first day. These are only basic impressions, and there's going to be lots more to come in the coming days. And we'll bring you loads more from Gary Anderson, Mark Hughes, Scott Mitchell, myself, the whole team here in Barcelona.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.